Happy March 4th, everybody. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening today, or perhaps you're listening on the archives. We know a lot of people do. We have every show we've ever done over at our website, which is education-talkradio.org, education-talkradio.org. We've been doing shows since 2011. They're all up there, if you can believe that. Go over to the little icon that says past shows. And we also have an icon over there that is for industry news and news about education, et cetera. You want to click on that. We put a new schedule up there every Saturday, so you can see what we're going to do for the following week. Okay, we've had a great week this week. Today, we've got a absolutely fabulous person. I'm going to bring her on in just a couple of minutes. We've got Dr. Goldie Muhammad, who is an associate professor and a renowned author and speaker. She's an associate professor of language and literacy at Georgia State, okay? And Goldie serves as the director of the Georgia State Urban Literacy Collaborative and Clinic. She speaks, she writes. Hopefully she'll write for our magazine, which I'll tell you about in a second. And we're going to focus today on her new book from Scholastic, which is Cultivating Genius. Cultivating Genius, an equity framework for culturally and historically responsive literacy. I love it. Let me say it again. Cultivating Genius, an equity framework for culturally and historically responsive literacy. And I'm going to bring Goldie on in just a second. I mentioned our magazine. We are so proud of what we're doing here in the field of equity, okay, and accessibility for every child. We talk about special ed, but we talk about everything, race, gender, socioeconomic class, et cetera, et cetera. It's a great magazine. We're so proud of it. We refer to it as AC&E, but it's Accessibility, Compliance, and Equity, and it's an online journal. See the whole thing at its website, ace-e-ed.org. You'll love it. Flip through it, read these great articles, and tell your friends. I want you to know, we also, just so you know this, we tweet over at EduTalk Radio, and we Facebook at EduTalk Radio and Larry Jacobs, and we link in at Larry Jacobs, so you can follow us, friend us, do all that sort of stuff. ace-ed.org is the website you want to remember. And on that note, let me bring in a real education ace, like that segue, Goldie Muhammad. There she is. Hi, Goldie. It's Larry.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Well, I'm just fine. What an honor it is to have you here, Professor. You are really something.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor to be here. I think you're something, too.
Well, thank you so much. What a sweet thing to say. It's just a pleasure. And I love what this book is about. And I love the title, Cultivating Genius. You're wonderful, okay? An equity framework for culturally and historically responsive literacy. It's all great. You're a professor at Georgia State. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Goldie. Where'd you grow up? That sort of thing.
I grew up in Gary, Indiana, you know, outside of Chicago.
Want me to sing the song? Gary, Indiana, Gary, Indiana. No, that's from the Music Man, everybody. Go ahead, Goldie.
Yeah.
I know Gary.
Yep.
I lived in Chicago for years.
Okay, yep, and I also lived in Chicago, in and around Chicago, and I started my career as a middle school teacher. I taught language arts, literature, and social studies. I then moved to be a literacy coach, and then a school district administrator over curriculum and instruction. So I've been, I laugh and joke sometimes that I was interim principal for 3 weeks because that's a really difficult job. I feel like I should still put it on my resume.
Right, you should.
Because of
you
all
should.
The work it took those 3 weeks. My graduate degree is in literacy, language, and culture. I went back to Chicago and studied at the University of Illinois Chicago, UIC.
Yep, great. And how'd you wind up down in Georgia?
So this was the job that I took right after graduate school. It was a tenure track position.
Wow, nice.
And I just took a chance on going to the South and being warmer than Chicago.
Yeah.
And I really loved the city and, you know, what Georgia State offered in terms of, like, the location and the student population. So, and it's been a really good position here. It's been really great.
And I think you're lucky to be there. They're lucky to have you. I know it's a good school. I've had people from Georgia State on the show prior, and everybody's just wonderful down there. And I know you graduate a lot of good kids and all that. And I have to ask you, your book is subtitled An Equity Framework for Culturally and Historically Responsive Literacy. Again, it's over at Scholastic, okay? But then you're the title, which I love, is Cultivating Genius. And I get the subtitle. I want to know how you came up with the title, Cultivating Genius. I love that.
You know, so my book editor, Lois Bridges with Scholastic, of course she would, you know, read every chapter, every moment I would write something, she would read it, and she would just be in tears. And she would say, you know, I just love this. This is so great. And she would say, it's like you're summoning the genius, you know, from students and teachers. And so that's the words that really resonated with her. And so we thought about, like, summoning genius, and then I thought cultivating genius. And so we settled on cultivating genius as a title because it felt like to teach with this equity model and in response to students' lives using this historical framework is very genius. And to teach it, it's almost like you're cultivating, you're nurturing, you're planting the seeds and growing the genius within the students and within teachers. I think it can go both ways. And so I love this idea of cultivation. And I would see the word genius in cultivation, both of those words in the historical documents in the 19th century, in several documents, it just kind of kept coming up, and I said, okay, this is what the title should be.
There you go. And we have to cultivate this. I love what you just said. There's genius in all of us, okay? And and so many kids, racially, socioeconomically, gender-wise, that hasn't been cultivated enough. Okay, and we're losing some of our best over the course of time. We have to change that, and to do it with culture. And, you know, we publish our magazine, Accessibility, Compliance, and Equity. This is what we stand for, okay? And you have to be culturally and historically responsive to make students and teachers understand this is the way we learn when we're engaged in it and we see ourselves in it, okay? If we separate everybody out, it's no good. Am I doing well, Doctor? Am I doing well?
Yeah, it's genius what you're doing. And
thank you.
And you know, to further go into that, it's like genius is sort of something that's sort of reserved for a selected few. And when we think like that, we continue to have disparities, I think. And so we have to sort of expand our notions and start student stories off with genius, not with what they can't do, what they struggle with, which I hear a lot, but start them off with genius and then go from there. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you. I was having a little discussion about this on a show yesterday with ASCD. Okay, and it was about, this is actually interesting, it relates to what you were just talking about, which was the advanced placement. There's a big challenge, I know it's in Boston, I assume it's everywhere, that the African-American kids and kids of color aren't doing as well, don't have the same opportunity in advanced placement, if I may. Okay, there's a reason for that. I don't believe it was intentional, but it's working out that way, so it becomes de facto, okay, and they're really trying hard. Okay, to literally, if I may, cultivate the genius in these kids. Okay, that's a literal translation. And I think part of the problem is the education up to date hasn't been historically and culturally responsive to what these kids need. You are right on target here, Goldie, I got to tell you. I mean, with all of this.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It felt like it was something really, it felt very kind of glorious that when I was finding this stuff and I said, you know,
nice
we
word.
Need to use this as a blueprint of what we need to do in schools today. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do. We really do. And I'll just mention one other thing. Last week I had Mary Keating on the show. I don't know if you know her, but Mary is the president of the American Association of School Librarians. And the show, okay, and they're a great group. I love that group. And the show that we did was about literally culturally responsive books. It's called, I think, Own Voices. And the challenge that everybody has is not that there's not enough books, okay, et cetera, about, let's say, the black experience, okay? But there's not enough written by black people, okay? And
yeah.
that's the problem. And we brought up that current book that's out there, American Dirt, where people got very upset that a book about the immigrant experience was written by a non-immigrant. And this is the same mm-hmm. challenge we have, okay? So we need more black authors, if I may, and people of color as authors and all that sort of thing to reflect their society, et cetera. All right, I'm going to shut up and let you talk for a second. The four learning pursuits of historically responsive literacy framework, okay? Talk about this. What are you? You have four learning pursuits that you wanted there. Go for it, Goldie.
Okay, well, and let me just add, I'm sorry, because you said something really cool.
Okay, cool.
And interesting. The authors are out there. It's the publishing companies
yeah.
that have to go and
exactly what
their
we
work.
Spoke about. Exactly what we said. And we got to get that
it.
Together. Yeah, we got to get that.
The four learning,
I'll send you that show. Do I have your email? I do.
Me.
I'm going to send you that show, so don't go looking for it.
That's
I'll just pull the link out and send it
so
to you.
So we continue to hear it more and more.
Yeah.
So the four learning pursuits.
In your book, yeah.
And the word pursuit is very intentional. This is a word that came from African-American readers, writers, and thinkers in the 19th century. They call their learning goals pursuits. And I love that word because it captures action, it captures direction, it captures goals. It is not trapped in smallness, like the word activity as an example, or even goal. I mean, I think pursuit sort of signified to me like this greater, larger something, which I love. And so I would look at the archives and the historical documents to ask myself, what learning standards did they have historically, you know, as they participated in learning spaces. And
mm-hmm.
I found four major areas, and these are identity development. You know, as they were reading and writing and thinking and learning, they were learning who they were. They were coming closer to selfhood, to a self-identity. But
mm-hmm.
they were also learning the truth and understandings about lives and cultures who are different than them around the world. The second goal is skills and proficiencies. Of course, they wanted to learn comprehension and decoding and all of the skills that we associate with different
yeah.
content areas. They became very proficient in that. The third is intellectualism. As they were reading and writing and learning, they were becoming smarter about new people, places, and things and concepts. And then the fourth is criticality. And this is, they wanted to move toward an understanding of equity, of anti-oppression, of social political consciousness, and of power. So I use criticality not in the sense of critical, like deep and analytical thinking, but criticality in terms of having a focus and understanding of power and equity. And so these four goals together make up the model. And then I thought, what happens if teachers in school said, these became the new set of learning standards, the new set of the Common Core state standards, if you will. What
yeah.
happens if teachers set unit and lesson plans collectively around these four areas? How complete and comprehensive the learning will be?
I'm here. I just had to turn off my mic for a second. Okay. It's so good. But you're using a word. I want you to identify for a second. You're using the word they. They did this. They did that. Who's they?
So these were African-American thinkers and readers, writers in the United States in urban cities. In the Northeast, such as like Boston, Philadelphia, New York, D.C.,
uh-huh.
and they came together to develop black literary societies. And these were sort of like your historic book clubs, but they were more than
wow.
just how we think about book clubs today. Yeah, like we've heard of Oprah Book Club. Most of us have been a part of a book club before.
Sure.
But these book clubs, they would organize themselves and pay monthly dues. Their monies largely went to fees and bills, but like, you know, to keep lights on or anything like that. But their money largely went to books. and cultivating their libraries. And
what years are we talking about? What years are you talking about?
Starting in about 1828. And, you know, they sort of dissolved, from my knowledge, in the late 1800s. And some of them repurposed themselves into, like, historically black sororities and fraternities. And so they would come together. Yeah, I mean, it's a part of, like, American history that most people have never heard of.
I never heard of it. I never heard of it. And, in fact, I was a history teacher, which is even more embarrassing. I never heard of it. But I never heard of it. Okay, and I'm thinking it's like kind of like the Chautauqua Society maybe up in New York, but that was well known. This thing wasn't. This is really cool. Keep going. How'd you stumble on this? This is good, Goldie.
Yeah, and I came upon this in my graduate studies, and my then professor and advisor Alfred Tatum put this in front of me, and he introduced me to the book Forgotten Readers. By Elizabeth McHenry, I think she's at NYU. She's a professor there. But the fact that she even titled the book "Forgotten Readers" signifies why a lot of people don't know about this history, right?
Yeah. If I may, let's do another one. Hidden Figures. Okay, it's the same thing, same story over again.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I sort of wanted to unearth this history and just bring, I mean, the history is just fascinating, number one, and compelling.
Yeah, it is.
But
it
also
is.
Then started to provide, like, a roadmap of how we can do better in schools as leaders in education. And so membership was like anywhere between about 10 to over 100. And they will come together to enjoy, read, write, and think and debate and all these literacies. And it was really centered on mathematics, science, literature, history. It wasn't just, writing.
And these were all African-American. These were all African-American people of the 1800s.
Yes, but it was also supported by, white abolitionists, too, William Garrison. He wrote a lot about it in The Liberator. He wrote a lot. He would visit the societies and the meetings and capture what he observed in the newspaper that he was editing, right?
William Lloyd Garrison, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they didn't just come together to read and write and debate and all those things, but they had like an intent purpose to use their literacies, their minds to improve the conditions of society. And so that's the difference between how we think about a lot of book clubs today. And so their reading, their writing, their learning was very purposeful.
Well, it was purposeful. So take that. Okay, this incredible thrust of intellectualism amongst the black community of the 1800s. Then you translate that, okay, into your four-part literary learning pursuit, okay? And now, how do we make this work? Take everything that you just said and put it into today's classroom. How do we do this?
Yeah. So we can make this work on a micro and a macro level. On a micro level, it is teachers taking their lesson or unit plan template, like what they use as a guide and a framework for planning the next week's instruction, right? And so usually there's a column in that or row in that right lesson plan template that says learning objectives, and teachers typically copy.
How well
and paste.
I remember that. How well I remember that little row.
I'm taking you back, Larry. I'm taking
you
back.
You are. Yes, you are.
And we would copy and paste the learning standard, right? The Common Core standard. And sometimes we would copy and paste, several learning standards that our unit or lesson would address. And so I'm asking teachers, as they're asking, like, how do I take this on a teaching level? Because people really struggle with what culturally responsiveness looks like and social justice and equity looks like in a lesson plan or in a unit plan. So they would take that that row and they would create four different learning objectives or learning standards, right? Mm-hmm. So they would ask mm-hmm. themselves, how would my instruction help students to learn something about themselves or others? So they mm-hmm. have now a very strong intent to connect their learning, their curriculum to the students' lives or the lives of others. Then they mm-hmm. will ask themselves, what skills am I advancing or improving? That's where they can pull from Common Core. The third thing they're asking themselves, what are my students becoming smarter about? What new concepts yeah. and, you know, that's the knowledge or the intellectualism. And then the fourth, you know, how will I advance my students' understanding about equity and anti-oppression? So then they set learning goals. Students will be able to think about their environmental identity. Mm-hmm. I've seen that goal a lot, right? Or their dependence on water. Anything that's connected to the students' lives can be identity. Mm-hmm. So they set learning goals for it. Now, I have seen teachers revamp their whole approach to their classroom and to pedagogy doing this very thing. Now, that's on the micro level, right? Because that means
yes,
some teachers may be doable, some teachers don't.
Yes. Did you want to add something to that? Because I have a question for you. Did you want to add something?
No. I mean, on the macro level, that's systematic. You know, we can talk about that if you like. But that's where, you know, I've been starting to think, like, how do we take a model like this
yeah.
and be more, you know, systematic and systemic with it?
Yeah, let me ask, Goldie, this is great stuff, and it really and truly is. And again, your book, again, from Scholastic, okay, it's Cultivating Genius, Goldie Muhammad, okay. I'm curious, you work at a wonderful teacher training institution, Georgia State, okay, and you're a professor there. Your colleagues are also professors of education, if I may, they're training new teachers. When you approach, and I want to extrapolate this out, when you approach your colleagues in the education department, do they look at incorporating this type of thing into how they're training future teachers? And because I always find this to be a challenge, and this is right across the country, okay? And I just talked about this with the Utah State Superintendent the other day. We have to get the teacher training institutions on board with what needs to be done. Again, culturally and historically responsive literacy, key stuff, okay? And your book is great. Can we get the teacher training units on board with this? And let's just take it as a microcosm where you are at Georgia State.
Yeah, Larry, I don't want to underestimate in any way what you just said. It is teaching preparation, teacher education. This is the start. We have to stop putting teachers out there who have been unprepared to teach in excellent ways, especially to Black and brown children who have been unprepared to teach in culturally responsive and equitable ways. You know, we have to stop with the one diversity class or the one multicultural class that is supposed to address everything that is Black and brown. We have to stop only putting theorists and research in front of our pre-service teachers that are white. I mean, I learned Vygotsky, I learned Dewey, I learned Louise Rosenblatt, I learned Piaget and Maslow. I've learned all these people, but I'm like, why didn't I learn, you know, African-American or Native epistemology or, you know, yeah. why didn't I learn from Black and brown theorists in education who have actually worked with Black and brown kids coming up from traumatic enslavement?
And that's who we need to learn from. It is, and because we're always moaning and groaning that there aren't enough Black and brown teachers out there, which means they're not going to education schools, which means in reality they're not finding a reflection of themselves in their K-12 experience. They're going into another field. They haven't found the joy of it. It's like a vicious cycle. We have to understand who we're teaching. Okay, and what you're saying, you know, you can apply what you're saying, okay, to any school district, any kids in the world. But we got to apply this where it really hits home, okay. And to me, that is with Black and brown kids, okay. And again, you can extrapolate it out to everywhere, but it's Black and brown, Native American, and other ethnic group, if I may. Okay, it's just we're losing these kids.
More.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more. And I think when people see black, they think it's just for black. Black children.
Yes.
If they see Latino, they think it's just for Latinx students. But when we just see white, we think it's for all. And so to go back to your question, you know, my framework and this, what we're talking through, it is a major shift. People have been conditioned to think about education as cultivating skills only, education as taking from Eurocentricity to depict and to guide what we should do. And so when I start to sort of put these models and thinking in place, it can be really confusing and heavy for people's minds, including, you know, colleagues at the teacher education level. And so I've been doing this work for, you know, about 10 years. I've been sort of like studying and researching and putting together this model. And of course, I put it together. I put it forth to my own colleagues first, you know, like, can this. And so I think even though I've been here for 6 years, I feel like it's starting to catch on a little bit now. But at first, you know, I would have a colleague to say, like, what does identity look like in science or math?
Yeah.
Because that's not a traditional way of thinking.
But you're on the crest of the wave, Goldie.
Even?
You're on the crest of the wave, okay? And that's the fun part. But all the water's still – you got to make this thing happen. I mean, this is really, really, really good. I mean, really good stuff. Do you have a schedule of events for your – are you going to any conferences or speaking anywhere soon on this?
The next conferences that I have coming up, you know, will be I'm at the Michigan State Literacy Association. They have a conference. UNC Greensboro, they have a literacy equity, like a smaller literacy equity conference. And then – AERA conference in San Francisco this year. I'll be talking about the book. Those are the major conferences. I usually speak at National Council for Teachers of English every year, which is held in November.
You've been honored by them.
They've given me a lot of awards. They've been very gracious.
You deserve it. Okay, they're a fine group. You should also talk to NCSS, the National Council of Social Studies, okay? And
you
those
know,
teachers,
because,
they really need to hit home with this. Yeah. You know, and I've got,
you know,
God
I'm
bless
starting
literacy
to think about
teachers.
Other spaces, other, like, content spaces, because the model, even though it brings literacies to all the content and discipline areas, you know, it is really an interdisciplinary or, you know, model. I mean, you should see some
of these math and science. And it hits home, okay? And I'm an old social studies teacher, so I'm being biased, okay? But I'm telling you, this is the kind of thing we always needed, okay? And there's no silo between literacy and social studies and social interaction and social learning. They shouldn't be siloed, okay? And that's why I'm recommending that, because I think it's culturally and historically responsive literacy. It belongs everywhere. It's a stretch maybe with math, I don't know. But Hidden Figures, I'll do that one. Okay, but with social studies, definitely. Okay, I still don't understand math.
Absolutely.
You want to do my tax return, Goldie? It's fine, you can do that. Okay, I still can't do math. Okay.
But you know what, as a social studies, as a former social studies teacher, where we have been neglected a lot, This model brings social studies into all the disciplines.
Thank you.
So it's
our
comeback. It's our revenge.
I got to manage Goldie. I got to be your agent. Your manager. I got to get you the word out here. Okay.
We're going to talk more.
I'm going to email you today, and if you want, I'll introduce you to the. I know the folks at NCSS. If you don't, I'm happy to introduce you. This should really be part of this.
So I would love that.
Oh, they're great folks, and you are great too. It's incredible. We just cultivated the genius of Goldie Muhammad. This is incredible. No wonder you're a superstar.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Well, you are. You are, indeed. And you're enjoying it. Now, one last question. Are you a Falcons fan? Have you become a Falcons fan, or are you still a Bears fan? This is the key.
My former eighth grader, Teron Armstead, he plays on the New Orleans Saints, and he visited me last week.
I love the Saints.
So I feel like I need to – support everyone, but him as Tim too.
Okay, if you want to stay alive in Georgia, don't mention that, but for the sake of me, I do like the Saints. My son lived in New Orleans for a long time. That's really cool. It's fascinating when you see your kids get to do something like that, your old kids, your students.
Yeah,
wow.
I'm so proud of him. Yeah.
And I hope he's proud of you, because look at you. You're a superstar.
And he's proud.
I'm telling you.
He told me that. It's funny.
You
he
are.
Told me that.
You are. Okay, you're incredible. All right, I'm going to look for an email for me. It'll come. I'm going to send it to you from my magazine, okay, website, which is Accessibility, Compliance, and Equity. That's what the email will say. I'd love to get you to write in there, too, so I'm going to nag you about that, okay?
I would love to, Larry. I would love to. Thank
we
you.
We would be honored to have you, Goldie, okay? Look for an email from me. I'll get it to you today. I promise.
Okay, sounds good. Can't wait.
Okay, have a good day down in Georgia, and go down to the Varsity and have a hot dog. Think of me.
I surely will. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Goldie. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Goldie Mohammed, everybody. Superstar Goldie Mohammed. Dr. Goldie Mohammed of Georgia State and Scholastic. Her book, this is great stuff. Cultivating Genius, I love that title, an equity framework for culturally and response, and excuse me, an equity framework for culturally and historically responsive literacy, and I'm going to add something, and learning, that's in parentheses, it's not really there. Okay, Goldie's amazing. All right, so thank you, Scholastic, for publishing Goldie's book. That's just great. All right, and we're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org, and we'll tweet it out over at EduTalkRadio. I'm going to ask Goldie today again if she'll write for us. This is fascinating stuff in our magazine, which we are so proud of, what we're doing with equity. We're getting great response on it. It's called Accessibility, Compliance, and Equity, ACE at ACE-ED.org, ACE-ED.org. Goldie, you're amazing. Thanks. We're going to be in touch some more. I love talking this stuff and getting stuff done on it. All right, everybody. Thank you. We'll be back in a couple of days. Check our website. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks so much for listening. I said a couple of days. We'll be back tomorrow. I just got a wave. We're going to be back tomorrow, as usual.